Numerology is a system of ancient codes found in our birth information that gives insight to the lessons we each must learn in this lifetime. Elizabeth Summers is a medium and esoteric numerologer offering her knowledge of ancient wisdoms to help fellow travelers towards a more enlightened and peaceful path. Join her now for the magical world of numbers.
Hi, everyone. Here we are again at the very tippy-toe end of summer. Here in Colorado, where I live, it was in the 90s today, so I think we're, thank God, at the very tippy-toe end, if you will. And fall is right around the corner this weekend. I love fall. Can you tell? September, fall, October, the leaves are changing. The house can be homey cozy with a fragrant candlelight, and I really get into my cooking. I'm a fall and winter cook, if you will. And I've already made batches of soup and tarts and collected apples. And, oh, I am into it, folks, just to digress a little bit here. Do I have a show planned for you tonight? Hopefully, it will be very powerful in many of your lives, give you a lot of food for thought. It's not going to be a Twinkle Toes show tonight. I'm going to share with you a lot of powerful information that, if it does not apply to you, please hold on to the information and help others when they arrive in your life. I opened my blog on the Magical World of Numbers website, and over the last several weeks, I have talked to you about books that I recommended to you for various reasons, and I have posted the information on those blogs of those books I recommended. I also posted the six steps of how to make a decision. That system is so clear, so easy, and I live by it. And to kind of straighten me out a little bit, too, when I get in the middle of my mud puddles. So by all means, check out the blog. I am posting now that I learned how to posting. And we will be off and running with all sorts of good information for you to help you along the way. So that's the Magical World of Numbers blog. And while you're there, sign up for my website. And I think I'm done. I'm ready to roll. I am so geared up here tonight that I want to tell you so many things. The last 2 weeks, I've talked to you about the number nine. The number nine is the jelly jar, if you will, jelly bean jar that holds issues 1 through 8 that every soul, when it comes into human existence, goes through. And then in one of my formulas where I list like a grocery list, if I see that this particular client has all of the numbers in her birth name, his or her birth name, and in a relatively balanced way, chances are that soul will not return to human form again. It's been there, done that. It has experienced the wisdom, the knowledge, and that is why the number 9 is called the Hermit, the wisdom card, the teacher, the inner knower. The answers are within. It's very rare in a chart for someone to have all the 9 numbers found in their birth name, and even more rare, and quite honestly, I've been doing numerology reading since 1988. I have only had 3 people in all those years have all 9 numbers and have them all in the absolutely perfect proportions that Pythagoras laid down. Balanced. No
tweaking up and down, no missing, nothing. Only three people. That's how rare that is. And so, therefore, the number nine is really powerful in the positive, and every number has a negative. So we're going to start out with the positive because we're very optimistic people, aren't we? The number nine is ruled by, astrologically, by Mars, the planet of assertiveness and moving forward and aggression. And I want you to hold on to all of these definitions or these terms connected to Mars, because this is the direction that I'm going to take our show tonight, our visit tonight with you. We're going to talk about aggression, control, and issues that are extremely powerful and detrimental that are presented to many people that need to be overcome. Tonight specifically, and these are called octaves. There's nine. I mean, a nine is a nine is a nine by definition. 18, 9, 27, 9, 36, 9, 45, 9, whatever, all the way up to 78 that correlate to the ancient tarot. Tonight, 27 nines night. 27 that adds to a 9. There is no letter in our American alphabet that equates to the number 27. It ends with Z, which is a 26, which adds to an 8. The number 27 in tarot cards is the wonderful Ace of Wands. There are four suits in tarot, and wands have to do with the creative force, have to do with day in, day out, have to do with our work, have to do with the, almost the human experience, if you will. And the Ace is powerful. It's about new beginnings. It's about new starts. So when I see the Ace of Wands in a person's birth name or the transits, the calendar readings that I do for them, I get very excited for them because something new is on its way, if you will. The Ace of Wands, when it appears, is really promises. Promises. Oh, we just love the 27-9. A real fertile phase in that person's life because the seeds that have been sown are going to now take root in a person's life, metaphorically speaking, grow into success, grow into abundance. The 27-9, even though I'm not fond about getting married in 9 years and I kind of hedge with my clients, well, I'd wait a little bit for that, but a 27-9 is kind of good for entering into marriage or starting a family. Moving to a new career, a new endeavor, new ideas, putting your new ideas into reality because the rewards are on the table. This is good, good, good. The 7 says some choices will have to be made. The 2 of the 27, this is called a compound number, not a double number. A double number is 33, 44, 22, a little technical in there. This is a compound number. And really, when there is a compound number, the first number leads the way. So in a 27-9, the number 2, which is about partnerships, which is about balance, which is about intuitiveness. But more importantly, it is about setting boundaries, which is one of the themes that I want to talk about tonight. Setting boundaries. And in setting those boundaries, have the courage to make changes. When I subtract 2 from 7, I get the number 5, which is the weak point. Be open, be broad-minded, be flexible, and make changes. And those changes will bring endings, and so it is. I tell you there are codes that are found in the formulas that I use that can determine if someone is an old soul. Old souls volunteer to come into human form. Old souls don't have to come into human form. They can do their spiritual evolution in other energy fields. But oh no, they volunteer to come in, bring the wisdom in, help humanity. It's the number one purpose. And you know, while they're here, they can clean up some of their own personal issues from the soul's perspective. But old souls always create drama. Number 9, drama, theater. Nothing is simple. It is just over the moon with issues and experiences. Old souls are like professors in university. You don't give a kindergarten problem for growth to a professor. Professor has to have more involvement. So all you old souls out there listening, watch and be careful about the drama in your life, because the older you get, the more you don't want drama. So the very positive aspects of this wonderful number 27, if it's a person has it as their birth date number, they can be kind of introspective and analytical. That's the 7 in there. But they're very affectionate and very emotional, and they can be really forceful and determined, though. See, it's about balance. Often, unfortunately, as with all 9s, 9, 18, 9, 27, 9, as a birthday number which rules the middle lane of life from 30 to 55 about, it's not always the most spiffy doodle experience when it comes to marriage. Romance is often lost. Comes and goes. Because the number 9 is about finishing things up. And then the person can get moody and depressed and introspective, and I just want to say snap out of it. When it's time, I put this on my Facebook this week, actually, that when someone leaves your life, it's time. Just let them go. Number 9, we come in here with soul agreements, and not every soul is going to stay forever and ever. Amen. They're going to come, they're going to go. What did you learn from them? And you let go. Take your hands off the romance coffee table and walk across the room. Mother, Father, God has its hands out there. Come on, I'll catch you. And we will go, and next thing you know, you're going to be running like all the toddlers are all around the house. The wonderful thing about the Ace of Wands is that it has this wonderful creative force about it. And as I talk to you tonight about some of the negative energies connected to the number 9, to raise your consciousness, to help you to identify certain things about your life, hold on to the positive, because the creative force is where you want to move to. Invent better ways in your life. And expand your potential. Everyone has potential. Not everybody's Michael Jordan, but most people can dribble a ball of some sort. That's your potential. Expand it. Go into ice skating, metaphorically speaking. Don't just stay stuck. This is your life. You have planned it. You have organized it. Do not devalue yourself. Be open to new possibilities, greater possibilities. Conceive of a dream. And in the book that, the abundance book that I recommended a couple weeks ago, is a 40-day prosperity plan. And my friend, one of my friends, she did that program, that 40-day program, and didn't even take her 40 days to manifest whatever she had written down. And always write with pencil, not pen. Pencil is a lead, it's an earth element, it helps move the energy. For Pete's sake, open your mouth and express yourself. Now, sometimes people who have a lot of 3s in their birth name, we have to kind of just tone them down a little bit about expressing themselves, because they're such chatty Cathys that they give you a headache if you listen too long. Have an imagination. You don't have to go out and be Picasso, but have some sort of an imagination. That's number 9. And allow your talent to unfold. Everybody has talents because we are God within us. And God is multi-talented. I like to cook, sing, dance, talk, teach. Those are my talents, my gifts. that I share with all of you every which way I can. But you have talents too. You have talents too. Enjoy them and share them. Share them. I give dinner parties all the time. I cook all the time. And people have said, Elizabeth, you know, you're so busy. Why do you do all that? I say, because that's my gift. Those are my gifts. And I find joy in sharing my gifts. You have gifts. Find them out. The most important thing, if you take nothing from tonight and our visit, the most important thing is for you to believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. You are divine. Your mantra is, God is, I am, we are one. Feel and be assured of your abilities. Have high self-esteem for yourself. That's not selfishness. But if you don't value you, no one is going to, and you will draw into your life, which is one of the things we're going to be talking about here. You just might draw into your life people who are mirrors of your own devaluing of yourself that you settle because you think this is as good as it's going to get, and settle. No settling. And just know, absolutely no, that things are going to work out. But you must intend that. Always remember what you think, what you say, you create. And sometimes, folks, you got to fake it till you make it. And so tonight, and especially it's all over the news, I thought how appropriate this is that we're going to talk about a subject that is so prevalent in the charts of the women. And men too, but mostly I work mostly with women, the charts that I do. And it is very connected to the number 9. Not that the number 9 is in their charts necessarily as a major issue. Codes for a lack of self-worth, a lack of emotional empowerment, a lack of self-worth is in their charts. Every number has a positive side, which I just ran down for you, and also has a negative side. And that's why it's important to find that center, that balance, if you will. The negative of the number 9 is about control. Now, if a person has 3 or 4 letters in a birth name, that's okay. That equates to the number 9. But I've had clients who have had 5, 6, 7 letters in a number 9. And really, it makes no difference how long the name is. It just has how it shows up. Now, these are the folks that have control issues. Yep, control issues. And they volunteer. And they help everybody. And they're out there. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, except they're volunteering, helping, getting everything done. I'll do it, because that is a control issue. They are keeping everybody, everything under their thumb because of fear. If it gets out of control, they will be scared to death. They won't know how to handle themselves because they don't have self-worth. They don't have self-esteem. They don't believe in themselves. And therefore, they control everything. And this filters into one-on-one relationships all over the place. Control issues come about when someone tries to exert power over the environment or the actions or the behaviors of another person. And we're going to examine some of this tonight. It's sometimes really because of excessive fear of something that's unpredictable or something that's ambiguous, or they need to prove themselves. Oh, my heavens. Macho Man, prove themselves. Machismo, prove themselves. And they fear losing control of themselves and the situation. Believe me, can you just think about that? It must be kind of exhausting, kind of overwhelming to have to keep that front up all the time. Keep in mind that control, which comes through manipulation, is always fear-based. And people who struggle with this really need to be in control, because they feel and fear at being the mercy of other people. And they fear that maybe what they do will stem traumatic events that'll leave them feeling kind of helpless and vulnerable. And as a result, they crave control in very disproportionate, unhealthy ways. And this leads to abuse. It leads to neglect. It can always be regained in a positive way in a person's life. But before a person gets to it in balance, some really nasty situations can occur. They'll micromanage. They'll try to orchestrate. And then as it escalates, that is when they will inflict physical pain on their loved ones in some form of ridicule or isolation or restriction or physical or sexual assault. Haven't we just seen this on television? Haven't we just seen those situations? When I saw Rice's treatment of his fiancée, I must tell you truthfully, I had to deal with my own personal flashbacks. Situations that I totally dismissed. And so therefore know that everything is coming up in our faces to raise our consciousness about ourselves, our values, our own self-worth. Why do we, in some instances, draw into our lives relationships that are abusive? And there's various forms of abuse that we're going to chat a little bit about tonight. As I look back into my 30s, where I drew in a lot of abusive situations, relationships, one of my reasons was because I thought I could fix them. I am powerful. I knew what to do. I something else. I was a fixer. But a fixer is a control person. I asked a friend of mine, Wendy, to call in tonight and visit with us briefly and tell us her story, why she got involved in her abusive situations, that maybe you're not a fixer, as I was, a know-it-all, an arrogant Aries, not taking advice, or maybe you can relate to my friend Wendy's story. So let's bring Wendy on the line. Hi,
hello.
Wendy. Thanks for visiting. Hi there. And
hi, Elizabeth.
Tell us your story as to what brought you, when you were younger, into your difficult relationship.
Well, it was all centered, of course, on a lack of self-worth, but not believing that I was worthy to be loved. You know, and when I was growing up, there was unconditional love wasn't really much around in my core family. I mean, grandparents gave it, but, you know, mom didn't. So that was very tough. I never really knew that. I heard the term unconditional love, never even occurred to me what the heck it could possibly be. And I certainly felt like I needed to do certain things. I needed to be a certain way in order to earn the right to be loved. I needed to earn things to prove that I was lovable. And I went through very great lengths to do that in a lot of different relationships. It was very painful for me to go through these things. But at the time, I was just sort of spinning around trying to grab on to anybody who would love me. I did what I think may be typical for a lot of people, which is basically to, find somebody that I think is a love interest. I'm interested in them, and I project in my mind what I think they want me to be, and then I would sort of try to remake myself into the image of what they wanted.
You gave your power away. Uh-huh.
Yes, I did, without even anybody asking for it. I was just throwing it out there, saying, take it.
Yes,
absolutely, for sure.
And it was such a needy feeling, needy. I need it.
Absolutely.
We all need love. And you didn't have it in your fundamental family. You were trying
absolutely.
To glean it from other people. Yes.
And there's nothing in the world that's a bigger turnoff than a needy person. So
exactly.
It's kind of like a catch-22. Once you get into it, it's a very negative circle because you can't, you are trying to prove that you're lovable, but at the same time, there's a core part of you that believes that you're not. And we are so programmed to want to be right that a lot of times we choose to believe the negative and the destructive just so we can prove that we're right. And we recreate that thing again and again, and we get this feeling that we're right. Unfortunately, it doesn't usually work in terms of getting us anything else that we want.
That's right.
So
it's
and that's a control issue, I think, in a lot, too, trying to be right.
Oh, hello. You're singing to the choir here in my younger years. Right now, at this age, it's like, okay, fine. It works. Okay, fine. Thank you for sharing. Okay, fine.
You're welcome.
Let me ask you, what turned you around? Because I know that you're in a very positive relationship now, and your life is very good, and mine too. Do you have any pivotal time where things changed and you took a different tact in your development?
Well, I've always been kind of analytical and introspective, and I've also been blessed with an optimistic personality, and I really think that's a tremendous blessing.
Yeah.
But there was a time when, I had been divorced for a while. I had gone back to college, and I was, looking for love in all the wrong places, and I was finding one relationship after another in which, there was no commitment. It was not going to happen. And I was looking for, or I thought I was looking for a commitment, and it wasn't, it wasn't happening. And it finally occurred to me that I was picking these people. It was a point where I just had this, I don't even know what brought it on, an aha moment that I was accountable for my choices, and I was choosing these people. And what was it about them that they all had in common? And it was that they would not commit to me.
Neither did your mother, and neither did your father. It goes back to your childhood. You did not feel that commitment from the childhood. And so, Wendy, doesn't it just come down to choices, based on a value system of what we think we deserve, and we draw to ourselves what we think we deserve, and the more and more and more powerful the person, the worse and worse and worse it gets. And years ago, in my 30s, I had a relationship with a man who turned my whole life around with his common sense, actually. And he said to me, people do not change without significant emotional events.
And what happens is that we keep going through emotional events that increase in intensity. It's called the universal law of tenfold return, and it intensifies until finally we're bleeding at the wrist, metaphorically speaking, to get us to change. And it usually is an incredibly dramatic, number 9, Mars-oriented, significant emotional event. Well, sweet pea, thank you for calling in. I knew you had something wonderful to share with our listeners from a different perspective, which is, and look how you turned out.
I have the most incredible life. Everything I ever wanted is in my
life.
How amazing is that? But I did want to say something else, and this is about figuring out what you want. It's very important to be very clear. A lot of us have these nebulous ideas, vague ideas of what we want, and we don't have a clear picture. And it's very difficult to get it if you don't know what it is. If you really aren't clear about it, then you just it's a very indirect path to get anywhere that you want to go because you don't know where you want to go. And I learned that, too. Clarity is really important.
And write it down and get clear. And our higher selves are very literal, and so are our angels and guides. It's like, well, you know, so many of my female clients want to have a man in their life. Okay, they have a man. So their soul, their higher self brings them a man, and he's a piece of work. Hey, you wanted a man. You weren't specific enough. You know, let's get some specificity. All right, baby girl, thanks for calling in. You're one of my favorites.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'll listen to the rest because it's so incredible. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks,
bye.
Honey. Bye-bye. Well, you know, abuse is abuse. But there are we're all very cognizant and very can recognize, bang, right off the bat, physical abuse. Harmful abuse, but some things are very subtle. And I want to talk to you about financial abuse. Some things people don't really think about, but financial abuse. This financial abuse keeps very many women trapped. 98% of all domestic violence cases come in very powerful ways to make the victim, and personally I even hate to say that word because there's no victim. There's no such thing as a victim. It's a victim mentality that will continue victimization. No, there are no victims. There are choices that create difficult victimization situations, but you are not a victim. And don't even go there. So let's talk about something that's so subtle, insidious in relationships, and it is financial abuse. And so what is financial abuse? Financial abuse is absolutely a form of domestic abuse. Withholding money, stealing money, restricting the use of finances for some reason. Let's talk about some characteristics of financial abuse. Does your partner steal money from you or your family? Are you forced to give him or her access to your bank accounts in order to make transitions without even your input? Now, I have a client who is has gone through this very situation of financial abuse, and it has taken a long time for her consciousness to recognize it and raise it. For instance, she doesn't have access to her husband's bank accounts, and when she wanted it, he changed all the passwords. He went out and bought a house and didn't put her on the deed. He said it's his house. They're married. She's not even on the deed to the house. She's put on an allowance, a food allowance, to feed big folks in the family. She's forced to, I want to use the word beg, ask him for money to have her hair done. She desperately needs dental work. He won't pay for it. Nope. She's asked him. She set out the terms. She did it. He will not give her 1 cent for any of her dental work. Overuse of credit cards. He overuses all the credit cards. And when emergencies come along, they are, all used up. I forget the term right now. Know that financial abuse, power play, the partner doesn't necessarily take his fist and hit you in the face. Financial abuse destroys the emotions. Money is an energy. And therefore, the money that he earns, which is constantly reminding her, is his money. He will do with it what he wants, and she has to live on this very tight allowance. And you say, well, why doesn't she just leave? I agree with that. I agree with that. And she's in the process of doing that. Bless her heart. She is in the process of taking her power. Enough is enough. Her last child is coming out of college, and she is on her way. Now it gets more subtle. And these are things you need to watch for in your relationships or in relationships that you observe others. The control becomes more subtle. Case in point, another client, female client, who is taking her power. And it's been my experience that the more the woman takes her power, which is the number 8 missing in almost every woman's chart coming in here into this lifetime, emotional empowerment must come first. Then comes money empowerment, because you believe in yourself and you put that energy out there. And your master's angels, because the universe is just. And I just know personally, but I also know from my clients that I counsel, spiritually counsel, that when a woman, now I'm always talking about women, but it applies to men too, so guys who are listening, just bear with me. When a woman makes up her mind, and that's the hardest part, getting to the decision. That's why I put on my blog how to get to the decision. It's as though the universe rolls up its sleeves, says, hot diggity, now we're going to get somewhere, and the doors begin to open. The coincidences begin to open that will help her move forward, forward, forward. Inch by inch, everything's a cinch. But the more powerful my other client is becoming, and taking her power and moving herself forward, the control in the household becomes more insidious. She told me a story that they have this beautiful family room, big, one of those big flat screen thingies, and he has his man cave kind of recliner, and she has her recliner that is hers. And she sits there and she reads or does whatever. It's her, his and hers, his and hers. And this has been going on for quite a while. One day she walked into there to sit in her chair to knit, crochet, read, I don't know. He was sitting in her chair. After years, he now is sitting in her chair. And would not get out. He said, you go sit over there. There's a chair over there. And now he will not give up her chair to her. That's insidious. It is a control issue. His feet are in quicksand. He's losing. And caution, because when those insidious, nitpicking, difficult things occur, this is when physical damage to a person escalates. It gets scarier and scarier. And so people do not change without significant emotional events. You do not want to develop and build up and build up, because it will get more intense, because your soul is saying to you, for Pete's sake, would you please get it in gear? I don't want to hear any of you ever getting hurt. Interestingly enough, another form of abuse is covert narcissism. Who would have thought? We all know what a narcissist is. I call them the look at me, I'm Sandra Dees. The covert narcissist is so subtle, and it's one of the most difficult abuse issues to recognize. They have a smooth kind of act that they've been practicing in their lives. They can be very self-effacing, very self-critical, and be such a louse at the same time. They can play so many roles. Oh. Some of them have verbiage that says, I'm helpless, and you need to help me desperately. Or, you're the most wonderful person I have ever met. I don't deserve you. Or, I want you to be my mentor because I really look up to you. You are so great. I just want to be just like you. And I've fallen in so in love with you, I just can't let you go. That's kind of the last one's kind of the kicker, isn't it? First of all, this narcissistic personality is a disorder. And beneath all the fake humility, the covert narcissist has all these traits. Grandiose, which they usually are not. They act superior to other people, but they're very self-absorbed. They're deceitful. They're manipulative. They're chronic liars. And they do not have a pinch of empathy. Narcissists are not empathetic listeners. Have you ever gone to someone, and I've got a list, have you ever gone to someone with an issue, you say, you know, blah, 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 whatever the issue is, and instead of giving you feedback about your issue, they immediately turn it to themselves. Yes, I remember when I went through that, and I. Those are narcissists. Everything is turned back on them. They don't really respond or hear energetically what you're saying. It's all about them. They are the center. Look at me, I'm Sandra D. They are not empathetic listeners. An empathetic listener listens, hears what you say, comments for your highest good on what you say, and knows that it's not about them, it's about you. And they have to have the humility and get over them big selves to be able to share you and allow you to vent. If they want your advice, if they want you to give them advice, then you give them advice. If they don't, shut up and listen. And so here we are. The North Carolina, no, Elizabeth. The National Coalition Against Domestic Abuse put out a white paper on tricks, on indicators that you are in an abusive situation. And I want to share them with you, and I hope that it triggers some behaviors that you or your friends or anyone who's listening says, oh my gosh, yeah, I never thought about that. But yeah. And look through the Neptunian fog at reality. Believe that you deserve better than. Take your power and do something to move your life forward, no matter what it takes. Most abusive, physically abusive, statistically, relationships, marriages end in divorce. And rightly so. You know how to dodge. So, according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Abuse, did someone embarrass or make fun of you in front of your friends and family? Do they put down your accomplishments or your goals? Do they make you feel like you're unable to make decisions? Stupid woman. Oh. Do they use intimidation or threats to gain compliance? You don't do this, I'm going to ba 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 ba. Do they tell you that you are nothing without them? If it weren't for me, you wouldn't have this house. If it weren't for me, you this, you that, you something else. You wouldn't have a car to drive. I can get my own car. Are you treated roughly? Are you grabbed or pushed or pinched or shoved? Or, God save you, hit? Person call you several times a night or show up unexpectedly in relationships? And this can be man on man and woman on woman, too. This jealousy. Are the use of drugs and alcohol an excuse for saying hurtful or abusing things? How many women have gotten beat up when the guy is in a drunken stupor or something, and the next day he's all apologetic, just like that Ray Rice is. He was on something, and the next day, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. It is so typical, and we fall for it. Are you blamed for how he feels or acts? Question mark. Are you pressured sexually for things that you're really not ready to do? Do you feel trapped, like there's no way out of this relationship? What am I going to do? I am telling you, there are so many organizations, and I know personally the situation, so many organizations that will help any abused person to get out of their relationship. You just have to make up your mind to get out. Are you prevented from doing things that you really want to do? Like, you know, going out with the girlfriends or going to moms, or are you prevented? No. Isolation is one of the tactics of abuse. Does someone try to teach you a lesson? How awful is that? Abuse you to teach you a lesson. Switch you with grabbing a 4-year-old and switching it with a tree branch in order to teach it a lesson not to do something. Unbelievable. Sometimes women who are abused, they're going to feel very scared on how their partner is going to act. Oh, I don't know. I'm not going to say that because what's he going to do? They believe, and we are so guilty of this. Hello, I'm raising my hand. They believe that if they help the partner change, he will be okay. If only he could change, she could change something about herself. Maybe if I was thinner or more beautiful or cooked better meals, or if I bought you more clothes, or I. Do you try not to cause any conflict that's going to make your partner angry? Oh, my Lord, no, because he has a bad temper. And okay, fine, whatever you want. Cancerians are very good at this. They don't want their family to be disruptive. No, this is such a gross generalization, so signs of cancer out there, get all flubberdub. But they're people pleasers. They want everybody to be happy, and their families are so important to them, especially the relationships, that they will almost sell their souls to keep everybody happy. And sometimes do you stay with your partner because you're afraid of what your partner would do if you tried to break up with them? Really? These are very, very common things. And those restraining orders are worthless. This statistics show that a restraining order does not always inhibit. Because if someone is angry enough, that anger will overcome them and they will take advantage of any situation. So if you, my precious listeners, are a victim of domestic abuse, financial abuse, emotional abuse. I mean, abuse is abuse, but it's so subtle, emotional abuse. And please God, not physical abuse. If you know someone who is a victim of domestic abuse, then it's not your job, my job, to fix them. We can only fix ourselves. But do what you can to share with them. When an abused person sees an opening, a way out of the situation, 9 times out of 10, they'll take it. They'll take it. And if nothing else, they'll take it for the sake of their children and get their children out of there. So some of the best things that we can do to help is to try to show them the opening, a way out, to build their confidence, that they'll feel safe, that they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. How's this going to work? I can see how this is going to work here. So never hit a woman. And don't hit a man either. Don't criticize and isolate and withhold love. No. Domestic abuse often escalates from threats, from intimidation, from verbal abuse, into physical violence. How to bring things into balance? Well, how to resolve control issues. Number one, let go of a fear of the unknown. You know, like allow yourself to let someone else plan the date or someone else plan the dinner or someone else pay the bills for a day or so. And ask your friends or family to be patient, because usually if they're not cooks, you'll wind up at McDonald's when the whole thing is over. But at least they have the opportunity to see that, you know, give it a shot. Realize that your family and friends are different from you. You chose them as a soul before you even incarnated to play the role of mother, father, sister, brother, family, friends. Friends come and go. The nuclear family stays for a lifetime. And they have their own way of doing things. That's okay. And it's not your way. And I'll tell you another thing. What might aggravate the heck out of you is really an aspect of you that you're being forced to look at. There's a saying in psychology that says, if you can spot it, you've got it. Why would you be agitated if you didn't have it within yourself to become agitated? And the choice is yours. They're showing you a mirror of yourself from this lifetime, other lifetimes, who knows, that you need to make some choices about to continue to be like or not to be like. It's as simple as that. So watch what aggravates you and examine yourself and accept yourself and forgive yourself and say, you know, I was probably like that in 603-907. I'm not now. Okay, I get it. So let others decide for themselves how to live their lives. Be that empathetic listener. It's not about you. If someone's had a hard day, if someone wants some guidance, if someone wants your opinion or your thought about something, listen. And unless they ask you to open your mouth and talk and give your opinion, it's not about you. You don't want to be, look at me, I'm Sandra D. talk to other people that you have confidence in, that you value their judgment. Do not go talking to everybody. Be extremely selective, very selective. Do not run your mouth about all your issues to everybody, because the bottom line is most people don't give a hoot and a holler. Be very selective. Find someone that's judgment that you really value and talk to them. Contribute to the conversation. Share with them your concerns. And please God, they are number nine. They are hermits. They are wisdom givers. They are crones that have had enough of their own personal life experience behind them to give you good guidance. Trust. Trust, trust, trust. Trust yourself. You are divine. You have everything within you to survive. You have made it this far. You are a somebody. You are, you are. I am. God is, I am, and we are one. And you must trust that inner knowing that is in all of us and get very clear and very specific as to what direction you want to go. And I promise you, the doors will open beautifully. I promise you. I know from personal experience, everything that I've talked to you tonight, I have been there. Even my best friends, my closest friends, don't know my stories. It's nobody's business. But I know my stories. Going through them, pretty traumatic. But I tell you, folks, I am so grateful that I went through them. So grateful. I have no animosity, no judgment anymore. Why am I grateful? I'm grateful because all of my experiences, I now am counseling all my wonderful friends and clients who are going through the same thing that I went through. And so, go to my website. Click on that numerology reading. Call me. Let's schedule a reading. Find out the blueprint that you created for this lifetime. Find out what's happening in 2014-15. And I'm a medium. I see dead people. I love it. They beep up into my office, sometimes not even invited, and we chat. Know that I am always here for you. You have value. And so until we meet again, know that I send you God's white light and his beautiful peace and harmony. And know that I wish you all good things. And thank you so much one more time for visiting with me in the magical world of numbers.